Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
The world is going into martial law. The definition in Black's Law Dictionary is the proper definition under U.S. law for martial law. Martial law, which is built upon no settled principles, but is entirely arbitrary in its decisions, is in truth and reality no law, but something indulged rather than allowed as a law. The necessity of order and discipline in an army is the only thing which can give it countenance, and therefore it ought not be permitted in time of peace when the king's courts are open for all persons to receive justice according to the laws of the land. Merriam-Webster, the law administered by military force that is invoked by a government in emergency when the civilian law enforcement agencies are unable to maintain public order and safety. Wikipedia, the imposition of direct military control over normal civilian functions by government, especially in response to a temporary emergency such as invasion or major disaster or in an occupied territory. And it's the latter. We're being occupied by the crisis.
Oh, they just absolutely love to hurt innocents. They just rub their hands together to break down civilization, to destroy families, to defile everything they can, and to deceive and to mislead, to build their own universe of fraud. This is the compendium of their abomination, desolation. And the open season on the truth, open season on the president, open season on loyal, decent, hardworking, honorable folks. Open season because the trash knows it's being taken out. And so the trash is fighting for its political, cultural, and spiritual life. And its life is culturally ruling us. Whole cacophonies, whole lines of these carrion crows, these buzzards, these vultures, these rotten flesh eaters. They sit up there and all crow and cackle in chorus that we're bad and we're fake and we're evil. When you judge a tree by its fruits, all we deliver is the news before it's ever forced out. All we deliver is the cutting edge. All we deliver is danger to them. All we deliver is the reality of people that aren't intimidated and aren't lying down and aren't taking their crap anymore. And you've got to go out with your permission slip that you're going, that you'll get from Walmart or Target, and then you'll drive in and the police will check you at a checkpoint, and then you'll go in wearing your mask and you'll get your food once a week when you're allowed out of your house, and you will go home or you will face 6 months in jail. But criminals, armed robbers, rapists, they're all being let out of jail by the tens of thousands a day now. The homeless are exempt in New York and in California. And the migrants and homeless in Europe, the Islamics, they're all exempt. Sweden's banned all air travel in and out of the country, except for Soros UN-funded aircraft that land multiple times daily from the Middle East and North Africa, bringing in military-aged men. So the criminals can run around wild. The homeless can run around wild. The illegal aliens can run around wild. The borders can pretty much still be open and porous. But you are going to stay in your house, you dirty, stinking American.
Old anchormen, you see, don't fade away. They just keep coming back for more. And that's the way it is. While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com/show and share the link today.
So folks, it is tomorrow's news today. InfoWars.com, band.video. That is the latest from John Bowne. Now, we recorded an interview yesterday evening. It was the only time that we could do it with Professor Peter St. Onge. And he's an economist with a breadth of knowledge that covers everything that we talk about here on InfoWars. So we're going to play that video for you here in this hour. It'll take up the whole hour. So enjoy it. It's just chock full of incredible information. And of course, follow us at InfoWars. Support us at InfoWars Store. You can follow me on Twitter at Harrison H. Smith. Follow our guests as well. And I hope you enjoy the conversation we had with Peter St. Onge.
When we can-
came out with Nitric Boost 3 years ago, it was a sleeper product. I didn't even promote it. But as listeners began to use it, it has become one of our top-selling products because of the incredible results they get. If you want to give your cardiovascular system a leg up, if you want to go in and help clean out and purify your blood, ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost is the way to go. You've heard Dr. Judy Mikovits talk about how it's an amazing formula. This is what she's recommended to people. Ladies and gentlemen, it does so many great things. Like, but you notice what happens in the morning. If you're a man, I feel like I'm 16 years old again.
When I was 16, I'd already had probably, I hate to brag, so I'm not bragging, it's actually shameful, probably 150 women or more. That's conservative.
Nitric Boost is simply amazing. It's great for women as well. Get yours today at InfoWarsStore.com for 40% off. But that is a limited time sale. But right now, it's 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And I thank you all for your support.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, this is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be welcoming my guest, Peter St. Onge. You can follow him at Prof. St. Onge. That's P-R-O-F-S-T-O-N-G-E on X. He does daily videos on economics and freedom. And he also has the honor of being my dad's favorite economist. He's always sending me your videos, so I'm happy, and I know he's happy as well that I am welcoming you to the show. Welcome to the show, Mr. St. Onge.
Thank you, and your dad has astoundingly good taste, so well done.
He does, although I totally agree with him, because actually we were discussing right before coming on air, the economy as a concept, the whole thing just baffles me, and I'm not shy about this. It's all black magic witchcraft. It's like a casino with rules that I don't understand and don't want any part of. But I get that it's an important thing that I probably should know about. But why I love your videos is because I can actually understand them, and you break things down in a very comprehensible sort of way. So tell me, what is the state of the economy right now? If you can break it down into a simple answer, good, bad, how's the economy these days?
Yeah, so in real simple terms, we're in the late stage, meaning that we are coming into a recession. That should not be the case. The economy was doing fantastic under Trump. They torpedoed it, of course, with the lockdowns. And then Joe Biden has turned what should have been an amazing rebound, right? Like we were pushing down in the spring and the economy should have just popped right back up after they got rid of the stupid lockdowns. But instead, Joe Biden has dragged it into this like plus or minus zero. It's actually a lot like what happened after the 2008 financial crisis, where we had like 2 or 3 years where just the economy was way, way slower than it should have been. And of course, the reason is because they're spending ungodly amounts of money, wasting it on government graft, on war in Ukraine or wherever it is this week, the migrants, just, this endless stream, green energy, just this endless stream of any billionaire who's got a Rolodex to donate is getting billions. And none of this is trickling down to the actual American people who pay for it all. So bottom line, we're kind of where, we're looking for the recession. The big debate is it going to be a big one or a small one? Is it going to come in 3 months or 9 months? But we've already really kind of queued up all the pins for that with the sort of boom bust on inflation that we had over the past couple of years, right? So you had almost double digit inflation. The Fed jacked up interest rates in order to try to choke that off. They could have choked it off by just reducing government spending, of course, but instead, no, they jacked up interest rates and they tried to choke off the private economy and try to get people to stop spending. That's really where we are. And, in 100 years of Fed history, they repeat the exact same thing over and over. They pump out the easy money, they jack up the rates to cut off the inflation, and then we get a recession. So boom, boom, every single time. So that's really where we are right now.
Well, and of course, it's always strange because when I go to the store, I'm paying a heck of a lot more than I used to. Everything's more expensive. We see that just in our daily life. Yet every time I turn on the leftist, the mainstream media, they're telling me how great the economy is. And there's this just massive disconnect, I think, between the reality of the situation and the perception or the desired perception. What's being told to us is obviously not reflected in our own personal life. And especially when it comes to jobs, they brag a lot about jobs. Obviously, they're taking credit for just allowing us to work again after the lockdown, and we get that. But then when you look into the details of these jobs, you see a massive decrease in the number of full-time jobs, while a massive increase in part-time jobs. And you see a massive decrease in the number of jobs going to Americans born in America, and a massive increase in the number of jobs that are going to foreigners. What is the perception versus the reality of the economy right now, especially when it comes to jobs?
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. Really, those are the two most important numbers when it comes to the economy are going to be jobs and inflation. And so that's really where they're putting all their gaslighting effort. Mm. And when you break those down, you know, starting with inflation is probably the simpler of the two here. The big debate is what exactly is the inflation rate? And, you know, government statistics might say it's something like 20, 25% since Biden came in. But, you know, people, I mean, they have the receipts, like literally, right? People post these receipts online where they'll show what they used to buy before the pandemic, what they buy now. Yeah, a lot of families who buy essentially the same things, fish sticks, apples, whatever. And those prices are like 50 or 100% higher. You can look at menu prices at McDonald's, and there again, you're looking at 35, 50%, depending on the chain. Nothing is 25%, right? You know, housing has gone up like 40%, everything across the board. When you actually look at the receipts that people are holding in their hands, you know, these are not fake receipts. People are not Photoshopping them over at, you know, Five Guys. And so that's the first question. The reason that that matters is that if inflation is a lot higher than we think, right, if it's 35%, not 25%, that's not just a question of, ha-ha, caught you guys in a lie. That means that we are dramatically poorer than we were, right? Because everything gets adjusted for inflation, right? So if your income is, you know, $100,000 today and it's going to be $110,000 tomorrow, but inflation went up 50%, you got a massive cut, right? You probably can't afford vacations. You probably have to sell your car and go ride a bicycle now. All right, you are in bad shape. And so that's the first problem is what the heck is inflation, right? Government keeps the main statistics. You might ask why we trust government statistics on, you know, like when Philip Morris tells us about the health benefits of smoking, we laugh him out of the room, right? When government tells them how they're doing, right? They're sitting there grading themselves. And they're like, you know, after careful consideration, I found that we've done an amazing job. At some point, you don't believe the jokers.
Right.
Anyway, so that's inflation. That's the first question. If inflation is higher, then, you know, yeah, that explains a lot of the misery in the polls. The next question is the jobs. And there, it's just dreadful, right? You break that down. You've got millions of Americans who dropped out of the labor force during COVID. Some of them retired early. Some of them went on government benefits. Government welfare went up about $800 billion. That's about 30% during COVID. Ooh. Right? Because for a while there, it was no questions asked, right? Hey, you want government money? That's fine. We're just going to give it to you. We'll try to figure out whether you qualify later. Now, once you get people in on that, they end up getting grandfathered in, right? So you got millions of people now who are on government benefits. There is a raft of research that once you go on government benefits, you stay there.
Right.
Right. You have no will to work anymore. You're getting fed. You're getting the government cheese. Good enough. You play Xbox all day. So we got all these people dropped out. When you add those people back in, because those people don't have jobs, they're just not being counted because they're not looking for work anymore.
Right. Right?
That's what the unemployment rate measures is. Are you looking for work? If you're not looking for work because you're getting government benefits or because you're strung out on fentanyl on the street, mm-hmm. you are not counted as unemployed. Right. So when you add those people back in, you're looking at 6.5 to 7% unemployment rate. That's point one. That's typical of early recession. Right. That's like right before the 2008 recession. That's about where we were. That's point one. Point two, as you mentioned, it's the part-time jobs. It's the migrants. The amazing job growth that we're seeing, it's either going to what the Wall Street Journal called the government industrial complex. I'm sorry, they called it the welfare industrial complex. Kudos to Wall Street Journal for actually using strong language for once. Hmm. Welfare industrial complex. That means these millions, you know, it's not just government workers. It's all these charities that get government grants to take care of voters.
Right.
To take care of new voters for the left. And so, you know, a lot of the jobs happened in there. Wall Street Journal, I think, estimated that about half of the new jobs were actually welfare administration, which, of course, the rest of us pay for. And then on top of that, now you've got this explosion in part-time jobs, which that's typically what you see when people are in dire straits.
Right.
People don't take second jobs for for the fun of it, you know, because they have too many evenings free. Okay, they take them because they're in financial trouble. So you've got millions of part-time jobs. And so actually a lot of that job growth is part-time. In other words, that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And then the third part of it, as you mentioned, is almost all of the jobs are going to migrants. They're not going to native-born Americans. And, you know, one of the – this is something I've talked about several times in the video – in the videos, when you bring migrants into the country, you are not solving a labor shortage. Okay, migrants come with their own labor shortage. And, you know, as sort of a mental test to this, all right, if we annexed Canada, they have a weak military, we could do it in like a week, right? If we annex Canada, we are not going to have 40 million spare workers looking for work. They already do stuff.
Right.
You know, they're dentists, they work at restaurants, they are architects, whatever they are. Okay. When you bring 10 million migrants in, they bring their own labor shortage with them. They got to go to the dentist. They get their hair cut. They get their car fixed. You know, they got to get their dishwasher installed. I mean, across the board, migrants do not solve any labor shortage. This is a complete myth. What they will do is they will lower the wages, solve the labor shortage in whatever job they're doing. Okay, so if you import a bunch of people who end up becoming janitors or fruit pickers, then the wages will go down in fruit picking.
Right.
You will have solved the labor shortage in fruit picking. You would have created labor shortages in dentists and hospitals and everything else across the board. So if we're bringing in 10 million people, they're statistically going to bring something like 6 million jobs with them. That's not jobs they're contributing to the economy. That's because they got it. They're like using up those jobs themselves. All right. And so that's really where we are now, is that the economy, it's almost like we annexed Canada, a third of Canada. But instead of annexing Canada, we just brought them in through the southern border one by one. So these people are not solving labor shortages. But what it means statistically is that it looks like our economy is creating jobs when all we're doing is backfilling on all these immigrants who snuck in over the border.
Right. And there's been, obviously, America's not alone in this. In Europe recently, there's been a couple articles coming out going, hey, you know, all these migrants we brought in ostensibly to boost our economy or to fill our pensions, they're all going on welfare and they're costing us more than they're bringing in. So, you know, it seems kind of crazy to me. You've got this economic justification for bringing in millions of people. They make the economy worse, and yet they keep bringing in millions of people. Am I missing something here, or is this all a giant scam?
Yeah, it's a scam. You know, you've got, as pretty much always happens, you've got this union of left-wing activists and donors, right? So bringing in all these immigrants, it does lower wages for blue-collar workers. I mean, they go into the gutter, right? You know, if you've got maybe you've got an American who's happy to mow lawns at $20 an hour, but he's not going to do it for 10.
Right.
But you get an immigrant in, and now suddenly you can get lawns mowed for 10. So if you're a lawn mowing company, or more specifically, if you're big agriculture or you know a lot of factories, they absolutely love this, right? They push on Republicans and Democrats to import more cheap labor. Now, those companies, they don't have to pay for the welfare, right? Their kids aren't going to school. The CEO of Smithfield Meats, his kid's not going to school with illegal immigrant kids,
right?
They don't suffer any of the social consequences. In fact, they can get their lawns mowed cheap, right? They can get cheap nannies now. So these guys absolutely love it. Then, of course, the Democrats are no dummies. They're very, very good at figuring out how to sneak more power into their meal. And so they're more than happy to play ball. And then, you know, the Republicans, as always, they'll chase the donor dollars. So they don't put up a fight against any of this, just like they don't put up a fight on the Ukraine war.
Right. Right. And then there's things like the TENT program. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but, you know, you've got all these massive corporations that are like, oh, if you're an illegal immigrant, we'll give you, you know, legal representation and we'll give you a place to live and we'll provide you a job. And it's like, OK, you're giving them a place to live. You're providing them a lawyer. You're giving them all this stuff. How much are you saving on bringing in illegal immigrants? Because, you know, they're not making these decisions out of the goodness of their heart. I mean, they're making a dollar decision, and they find it's cheaper to bring in an illegal immigrant, provide them with all this extra stuff, than it would be just to hire an American. Clearly, this is a giant graft going on here, and obviously the amount they save by hiring illegal aliens must be huge because they're offering all of these extra things on top of it.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So instead of paying the American 20, they pay the illegal 12. They give them another foreign benefits, and then they throw $50 or $500 onto the taxpayer, and they say, here, you go take care of, you know, they bring in their sick parents who are, you know, on dialysis. I mean, it's just absolutely endless. And, you know, one of the tactics that the left plays is that they try to conflate illegals and legal migrants.
Right.
Legal migrants, people who actually pass the screening, they pass security checks, criminal checks. You know, we have systems to make sure that they have some skills. Maybe they have a college degree. Those people are solid gold. They're fantastic economically.
Right.
True, they vote like crap. A lot of them vote socialist, but economically, they're pure gold. They start businesses. They have higher rates of entrepreneurship, lower rates of criminality. Legal immigrants are wonderful economically. Illegals are a completely different story because they are, by definition, the people who would not have passed the quality standards.
Right.
Either they have a criminal record, they have absolutely garbage human capital, maybe they're illiterate. What kind of taxes are you going to pay if you're an illiterate who doesn't speak English? You're going to make like $8 an hour your entire life. You don't pay taxes if you make $8 an hour. We have a progressive tax system. You actually get money back. It's called the EITC. So like every fifth or every dollar you earn, if you're making that low, every dollar you earn, you get another 50 cents back from taxpayers. These guys are just pure absolute cost. The idea that, you know, you've got like neurologists sneaking across the border, this is just pure fiction. But that's the game they play, is that they take the fact that legal immigrants are pretty incredible, and then they try to sprinkle all the illegals in there, stuff them in, and say, look, they're immigrants. Well,
right.
Yeah, there is a world of difference between the two.
Yeah, and it's funny that, now it might be a little bit different, though, because I've seen some TikTok streamers or some Twitch streamers that are coming across the border. So we're getting all sorts of types of migrants coming in these days. But, you know, this is another thing, just to reference my dad again, because he's been drilling this into me since I was a kid. The idea of, think about how much is supported by this tiny population of people that actually produce things in America. You've got not just the welfare state, but all of the immigration, all of the foreign aid that goes out, but then the government contractors and just the sheer weight of the government employees with millions upon millions of people in the federal government and the state government and the local government. And when you really think about it, it's like, okay, so is 10% of America actually productive and paying for the rest of the 90? Is it 5%? Is it 15%? I mean, what percentage of Americans are actually producing goods, and how is it enough to pay for the rest of us? This again, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's absolutely astounding. And, you know, you generally don't see it unless you work your butt off and actually hit some success.
Mm.
And holy moly, the taxes come for you. It is something astounding. And really, they've created a system where it is hard to succeed and it's very, very easy to fail. Right? If you fail, you are like a hero, man. I mean, it's like you walk out on stage and everybody applauds you. You know, good job. You've been in prison half your life, never held down a job. You're an addict. brave and stunning. I mean, it is an upside down culture, because if you're doing that, you are encouraging people to fail. Right. Mm-hmm. Our system, what it should be doing is it should be uncomfortable to fail. There should be some built in incentive to actually succeed, take care of your body, to be productive, to serve everybody else in your community by, you know, producing a good or service that they're actually happy to pay for. All these things should be encouraged. And instead, because of the political incentives involved, the system is almost set up to try to get you to fail. It'll keep throwing roadblocks into your path until you fail. Once you fail, it'll pick you up and love you.
And you know, the sad thing is that even if you succeed, I feel like often, I mean, how rare is it that a company is actually created from the ground up and succeeds on its own and stands on its own and remains an independent company? Seems like most of the time it just gets snatched up by, you know, some bigger firm or BlackRock or something else and just gets folded into sort of the corporate world as it stands already. So not a lot of disruption going on here. And it seems to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, we've got clips of people like Klaus Schwab. There's actually a clip of Klaus Schwab. He's on the stage with Joe Biden. And he says, in no uncertain terms, he says, the greatest barrier to the implementation of a false industrial revolution, which is, of course, human slavery worldwide, planetary enslavement. He says the biggest impediment is the middle class. The middle class won't come along with us. And it seems like everything I'm seeing out of the economy is deliberately designed to destroy the middle class and either benefit the people at the very top or keep the people at the very bottom in their place and increase their ranks by herding the rest of the middle class into them. I mean, is it deliberate or is it an accident that the middle class seems to be getting the brunt of all of this and is really the most disadvantaged out of anybody at this point?
Yeah, so that's been the communist playbook for 100 years, more than 100 years. They always attack the bourgeoisie. The bourgeoisie are their just permanent enemy. And the bourgeoisie means the middle class. And the issue that they have with the bourgeoisie is that, you know, it's very easy to direct public anger at the rich, right? The rich, you know, they got the, you know, the yachts and the limousines and all that, okay? That's great. So they love the rich because the rich are their marketing department, right? That's how they can really get people riled up. They love the poor because, and this is part of the reason why they loved you when you failed, because now you have graduated to a foot soldier of the revolution. Now you are angry. Right. So they love, you know, the poor because they're useful idiots, right? They're going to end up voting for starvation, but, you know, they're relatively easy to get there. The bourgeoisie are the ones who are in the way, the middle class, because they like their lives just the way that it is, right? They want to take care of their lawn. They want to have a nice house with flowers out front. They want to, you know, take their kids, walk their kids to school in a safe neighborhood. They want the good things in life. And so that is always the enemy. That's been the case ever since the beginning of communism. And unfortunately, yes, the, you know, whatever you call it, the sort of deep state Borg. I want to say Democrats, but it's not only the Democrats. So it's really kind of the Uniparty. The Uniparty is pursuing strategies that would be consistent with, you know, an economic version of a communist insurrection.
Yeah, it seems fairly obvious to me. And I wonder how people don't recognize this more. Obviously, you see it. But, you know, when you think about the average person, I mean, aren't they seeing their retirement being eaten away by inflation? Aren't they, you know, seeing the gains that they've made being taken from them? And I mean, is America just sleepwalking at this point? Do you think people recognize where things are going? I mean, how long do you think this can go on? Because I get the feeling anytime I do try to look at the economics. I don't understand it all the time, but I do give it my best shot. And it always seems like we're always teetering on the edge. The bubble's always about to burst. It always seems like it's about to come down, and yet it doesn't. I mean, how close are we to like a total collapse or a loss of confidence or America or the dollar not being the reserve currency? Like, you know, how close are we to disaster right now in terms of the middle class?
Yeah, so I think what happens, like the reason why a lot of people don't understand what's happening, or anyway, why they're not angry about what's happening, is really because of the press. The media had always been pretty deeply left-leaning, but they sort of threw off the mask.
All right, folks, this is our interview with Peter St. Ange, PhD, at Prof. St. Ange on X. Follow him there. More on the other side. The conversation with Peter St. Ange continues in about 90 seconds. Stay with us. Remember to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do here. Get the great guests that we get. It's all possible with InfoWarsStore.com. Your support is required for this operation to continue.
All right, I'm going to talk about something that's really central to everybody out there watching and listening. And when I say this, I'm not lecturing you. I'm lecturing myself because it's a psychological phenomenon of how tyranny works. We've all heard of the frog in the pot, and it's a true story, because in Louisiana and Mississippi, they eat a lot of bullfrogs, folks. I've had them. They're pretty tasty. They're fresh. They're boiled with a little bit of Cajun seasoning. If you throw a bullfrog into boiling water, he'll jump out. If you put him in cold water and slowly turn the heat up, he'll just sit there, and as it gets warm, it gets hot, he passes out, he dies. So we all know we're in tyranny, those of us that are awake. Some people don't. But a large portion of America, I'd say a majority now, overwhelmingly knows we got a corrupt, occupied government that's absolutely at war with us. But that's not enough to just know it. And then you can't just get used to whatever the new insane excess is as the tyrants double down and then say, oh, sure, we know about it, and then just accept it. You've got to speak out against it. You've got to get upset about it. You've got to pray about it. You've got to vote against it. You've got to support lawsuits against it. And you've got to back the people in the media and in the government and in the corporations and in the churches and in education that are fighting the tyrants and in medicine. We're not in normal times. And it's not normal to be under this level of oppression and surveillance and bullying and tyranny. And our enemies, a bunch of criminals, have arrogantly hijacked this country. And they mistake America's history and its power for their own. And that's why whistleblowers in the federal government, whistleblowers in big tech, and whistleblowers in private industry and law enforcement and everywhere are so critical. We got to kill their ideas. We've got to expose them. We've got to remove our support from them. We've got to get control of our governments. And then we're not going to imprison and execute these people once they've had due process because we hate them. We're going to do it because we love the good people of this planet, and we're not going to take it anymore. But when you see unbridled, psychotic evil by the technocrats and the big corporations unleashed on people, folks, if you're not pissed off, something's wrong with you.
Most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland is white supremacy.
The most lethal terrorist threat in the homeland, white supremacists.
The most lethal terrorist threat to the homeland today, white supremacy is terrorism.
We have seen a rise in white supremacy.
The number one threat to this country, domestic terrorism-wise, is white supremacy.
But at the end of the day, folks, the best sports players, anybody, have emotion. And the best artists have emotion. And I'm just telling you, I'm really sick of these people. I've got four children, and I care about humanity, and I like good, decent, wholesome fun. And man, the people we got running things aren't just evil pedophile jerks. They really want us eating poison bugs. They want to take away everything decent, a nice juicy steak. They want to take away a nice piece of fish. They want to. They told people during the fake pandemic, don't look at the sun. Don't look at the sunset. Don't talk to your neighbors all over the place. Screw these people. I'm sick of them dictating everything. I'm tired of their cult. And I'm not in their cult. And I want to stop them.
What did he just say?
He said there's a storm coming in.
I know.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Always been pretty deeply left-leaning, but they sort of threw off the mask starting around 2008 under Obama, and they just said, you know what, screw it, we're just going to go 100%. And I think the reason they did that was because of the internet. They were losing audience. You know, CNN was getting destroyed in terms of audience because they were kind of taking this middle line. And so really the entire corporate media, they decided that they had to choose a side. And of course, they chose the left because they were left to begin with. And, you know, the good news on that is that they've so obviously thrown off the mask at this point that many more people are waking up. Right. So 20 years ago, if you said that the American media, like New York Times and Wall Street Journal, if you said that these guys were part of this uniparty that's at war with the people, you would have been a crazy person. Like, almost nobody would have agreed with you, maybe 5-10% of Americans. And at this point, you're talking like 40-50% of people who agree with you. So that's the good news, is that they have thrown off the mask. The bad news, however, is that it takes a while for a lot of people to wake up. And so in the meantime, they are essentially like a drone army who can just be directed at will to the five or the 2-minute hate.
Right.
So we're still kind of working through that. And, you know, maybe the media can still buy the uniparty another election. We'll see on this upcoming one. I mean, it should not be nearly as close as it is. We can debate whether Trump is going to win or lose, but the point is that it shouldn't even be a contest. The only reason it's a contest is because of that 100 million strong drone army that they've still got going from the sort of legacy trust that have been put in the media over generations.
Yeah.
In terms of the second question, when is it going to collapse? You know, the big question there is really, when do people understand what's happening? So the thing is, things don't come to a head because they have to. They come to a head because people rise up and reject what's happening. You know, if we look at one of my favorite examples is the European debt crisis back in 11 or 12. And that was when Greece was going to default on their debt, and then a whole bunch of European countries got into trouble. And what I think was interesting back then is that at that time, everybody was talking like, you know, Greece is just on the verge of total collapse, going to be anarchy. Okay. But the amount of debt interest coming out of Greece at the peak of its crisis, as a percent of GDP, it was less than was coming out of the U.S. at the time.
Wow.
In other words, it was not that Greece was, you know, had to go into crisis. Rather, what had happened was that there was a political entrepreneur who came out and said, hey, I got a great idea, guys. Let's stiff the Germans because, look, they're rich. They're greedy. We don't like them to begin with. Screw these guys. OK, that, I think, is really the model here. So, you know, we know that the water keeps getting hot. The frog stays put. There's some point where the frog jumps. The question at that point is, if you get a political entrepreneur, then the frog jumps when it's still tolerably warm. All right. If you don't get that political entrepreneur, in other words, maybe, you know, you've got censorship or you don't have free speech. So if you choke off those political entrepreneurs, then the frog will stay put longer. He will eventually boil. But what you get at the end of that is a very, very ugly process, probably with a lot of bloodshed.
Right.
So that, I think, is really the question. If we have free speech, then, like, if we had perfect free speech right now, right, if we just sort of imagine we had a level playing field, Google wasn't playing with the search results and the mainstream media was giving equal consideration, all this, right? If we had a world like that, then starting today, then obviously Trump would win.
Right.
You would have, you know, the Democrats would have to, you know, go back to the way they used to be. So, you know, closer to Bill Clinton than whatever they've become today. So that, you know, they would like Bill Clinton, lest we forget, did put up a border wall. He put a lot of money into the border. He cut spending. He played ball with Newt Gingrich. Right. The Democrats would go back to that sort of same party. And, you know, sort of the entire centroid would shift a lot more towards the mainstream. And I think that, you know, we could start cutting spending. We could start actually putting in good policies. So, you know, ironically, the sooner the frog jumps, the less disruption we have. Right?
Right.
On the other hand, and I guess this is sort of good news, you know, if we do get completely censored, then yes, it's going to take longer, but when it does come, we're going to completely purge the entire system.
Right.
I hope we don't get there because there will be innocence. And, you know, it won't be like, you know, the number of people died in the 2020 riots. I mean, it'll be probably a significant number of victims. So I hope it doesn't take that long. But that's really the question, is how open is the system to course correction? And if it's open, then it comes sooner, but it doesn't really look like a Ragnarok.
Right. So we're just sort of putting off the inevitable, and the longer we put it off, the worse the eventual outcome becomes. That makes perfect sense to me. And again, it's just one of these things where I kind of understand how people could be fooled on the political side, because I'm in this all the time. I'm constantly watching everything. I'm seeing it from all angles. So I have a pretty good view, but I know most people don't have time to do that. They turn on the evening news. They see it reporting something. They assume it's true. I get that. But then when it's the economy, it's like, well, this is contradictory to your own observations, your own spending habits, the prices you see at the grocery store. This is why it baffles me, and it illustrates the power that the mainstream media has over the minds of people. If they wanted a panic, they would have one, and if they want a crisis, they can create one. If they don't, it just won't happen. Let me just say, if you're just joining us, Peter St. Onge is my guest at Prof. St. Onge. It's ProfStonge. PeterStOnge.com and ProfStOnge.com. He does daily videos on economics and freedom. He's teaching me about the economy in a way that I can actually understand, which is rare for an economist, which is why I encourage you to go find him. And I understand you have a book as well, I think you mentioned.
No, I was working on one tentatively called The Crisis Industrial Complex, and I got caught up in too many other projects. But I do talk about that a lot in the daily videos, just the idea that, you know, traditionally the relationship that we had with government is that they would, you know, fix the potholes and arrest the bad guys and try to kind of keep things, you know, comfortable for the voters. And that was kind of the bargain. So in other words, they would like head off crises. And I think that what we've fallen into, really arguably since 1913, World War I, I think, was really the iconic elite crisis, is that government creates these crises because each crisis pays them. And they actually did it on purpose in World War I. It was called war socialism. You had all these socialists who wanted to launch their revolution, but they noticed that the middle class, the bourgeoisie, was never going to go for it. And so they said, well, okay, but if we have this giant war, then we're going to be able to impose war socialism. They're absolutely correct. That's exactly what happened. You know, during World War I, for example, if you wanted to start a business selling shovels, okay, you had to get permission from the War Planning Department, who would decide whether, you know, is there already too much competition in the shovel industry? Is your shovel sufficiently unique? I mean, literally, it was like the Soviet Union. And those guys, unfortunately, you know, it's kind of like an animal gets a taste of human flesh. And so, you know, you kind of have to put it down. And unfortunately, those guys got a taste and, you know, they came roaring back under the Hoover administration and then the FDR administration. Those guys had the exact same policy mix, Hoover and FDR. They were essentially the same president in terms of the economy. And they reimposed it again. And of course, that led to the Great Depression. They took a relatively minor stock market crash and spun that sucker up into a world-ending catastrophe. And what worries me at the moment is that if we look back at that sort of loss of innocence in World War I, that it, you know, sort of raised this entire generation of rabid bureaucrats who lusted after totalitarian power, well, we just did that, right? And, you know, the COVID lockdowns were approximately the same length as World War I. So I'm very concerned. I think right now we're in a pretty dangerous place where these guys are running loose in the government. You know, the people who were in charge, some of them have retired, but I mean, they haven't been repudiated. Right. Their acolytes are still in charge. I'm sure that, you know, Fauci's guys are still running the show over at NIH. It's really across the board. All these guys are still in power. So if we look back to the World War I example, these guys no doubt are sitting there lusting after, dreaming. They close their eyes and they remember what it felt like then.
I have to say that I don't see a big solution other than some sort of mandatory vaccination. I know federal officials don't like to use that term.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you're going to have schools, universities, and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. Lady, you're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us, you get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological bullshit and they get vaccinated.
So he's talking about making things more difficult. You know, if you want to get into college, if you want to do anything, right, you just get vaxxed and you can do whatever you want. Now, let's apply that to the economy and what we've talked about numerous times about central bank digital currency. If you want Social Security, well, you better have their digital system with the FedNow app or whatever, right? It's like, how many people are going to say, I don't know about this. Maybe it's the mark of the beast. Maybe it is intrusion on my bank account. Maybe it's this.
But I need my paycheck.
But I need my paycheck. Right? You make it really, really difficult to say no. And you're going to have a lot of the population that complies. Just like with pandemics, just like with the economy, just like with the banks. And so this is the world that we're entering into. But if you're an investor, your goal should be to buy low, sell high, maximize your profits. And that's what we do. And we'll hold your hand through the economy. We'll let you know when it's time to buy, sell, reallocate, do whatever needs to be done. So you don't have to watch those like a hawk. And so, because we do. And now you can do that with an IRA. You can do that with a non-IRA. You can do that with your cash accounts, brokerage accounts. You can take delivery of it at home, or you can have it stored. So many options. And we can't use a cookie cutter approach, Alex, because everybody's different. Everybody has a different need. Is it growth or is it income? Are you close to retirement? Are you young? And that's why we spend so much time educating our clients.
And it's simple. Boom. They call, they get a consultation, they talk to you, and you guys want a long-term relationship. And then, boom, you deliver it to them or to a repository where they want to have this stored. It's so simple. You're the place to go. Everybody should give you guys a call or send an email right now at kepm.com/go with your name and number, your info, when you want to talk to them, what the best times are, kepm.com/go. Send them the email. But even better than that, call, leave your number, give them your number, make the connection. Don't wait. I mean, it's such a simple move to make, and I only promote what I really feel good about. kepm.com/gold or call 720-605-3900. Your cardiovascular system is under attack. Everybody knows it. And I've got in my hands two products that are absolutely insane when it comes to what they do for your body and your overall health. One of them is the highest grade fish oil you can find. Everybody knows how good fish oil is. This is as good as it gets. And when you purchase it at InfoWarsStore.com, you support the broadcast, a 360 win. And then, of course, Nitric Boost. You've heard all the rage about this. A whole bunch of concentrated natural compounds that clean out your blood and clean out your cardiovascular system. Everybody should be taking both of these products at InfoWarsStore.com. And both of them, by the way, are 40% off for a limited time. Now, this sale is going to end in about 2 weeks because we've already sold out of more than half of these products since they came back in. But if you want to get Ultimate Fish Oil and Nitric Boost for 40% off, get them both today at InfoWarsStore.com. I want to thank you all for supporting the broadcast. I want to thank you all for spreading the word, because without you, we are nothing.
Long time there. That was something that had not happened since 1648, the Peace of Westphalia. All right?
Right,
that was not on the bingo card, man. There was a lot of crazy stuff that happened. Even in World War One, they wouldn't have dared do something like that. So I think we are in a very dangerous spot.
Yeah, and oh my God, I mean, so many things you just brought up. I mean, 1913, the Fed, income tax, just, you know, not a coincidence that that's right ahead of World War One. And that's the exact argument I've been making for why I think we're headed towards World War Three in a quite purposeful way. I mean, I think the people at the top, if you look at what they're trying to achieve, it's all accelerated by war. I mean, you want to take over economies? Start a war. You want to reorganize entire industries? Start a war. You want to surveil people? Start a war. You want to censor people? Well, war is extremely convenient excuse. You're working for the enemy if you, counteract our statements. I mean, yep. War seems a very useful, and I think that's amazing. The crisis industrial complex, that's what it is. That's what the World Economic Forum is. They even coined this term polycrisis. So polycrisis is coming, where it's crisis upon crisis upon crisis. Everything's a crisis at this point, and yeah. All the crises are interconnected.
Yep.
It's maddening, and yet it's sort of impossible to resist, right? Because they can both launch a fake crisis and convince people to be scared to take advantage of them. But at the same time, they can launch a real, they can actually make a real deadly disease and actually release it. So you're sort of in this impossible position, and it, you know, the fear overrides logic and it, you know, makes people willing to do extreme things because they think they're going to die otherwise. So it's like, how do you confront this? How do you confront the crisis industrial complex when it's so effective on a human psychological level?
Yeah, well, that's why I think that the number one, by far, the most important battle right now is free speech.
Mm-hmm.
because what's absolutely key, people like you or me, you know, there are a lot of people, a lot of listeners who are going to be posting on social media, or maybe, you know, you have content channels of your own. It is absolutely critically important that you get your version of events out, because that is the only way that you can fight them. You know, so if they start a war on purpose, which they appear to be trying to do in Ukraine, and now they're talking up in China.
Right.
If they start a war on purpose, the people are going to regard that very, very differently if they think that, say, Joe Biden started the war on purpose, versus if they think that it was a Pearl Harbor type. And of course, I don't.
Right.
I think that was FDR. But at any rate, the people at the time, right, most Americans thought that it was just out of the blue. Japan hit us, sucker punched us.
Right.
And if they do believe that, if they buy that version, then you get a war. You're going to get a rally around the flag. You know, George W. had like a 90% approval rate for George W. Bush.
Right.
Who is not a naturally charismatic guy, love him or hate him. Because Americans felt, I think correctly for 9/11, that we were sucker punched. So what's absolutely key here is to name, to expose this process, so that when the next crisis comes, people don't run to, you know, these fake leaders, you know, like Save Us. Rather, they turn on the fake leaders. So if you look at what happened in Afghanistan, for example, the Afghan withdrawal, that did not boost Mr. Biden. You know, the various adventures like putting soldiers in Syria during during Obama, that did not boost him. And the reason it didn't is because of the framing. American people did not think that that was a war that we should have been involved in. So there was no rally around the flag. So I think it's absolutely critical that free speech, right, we have to have the ability to at least get the alternative version to people, so that when they launch these crises, people can, you know, instead of fearing the crisis, they can get angry that these bastards caused the crisis in the first place.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right. And of course, it relates to COVID as well, where now they're acting like, well, we're just now realizing that it may have come from a lab. And gee, it looks like these vaccines might not have been as safe and effective. But we all thought they were. But unfortunately, you got outlets like InfoWars standing here who at the time were telling everybody what they're just now pretending to learn for the first time. So it sort of is impossible for them to keep up the lie when you've got proof of us at the same time telling the truth. Obviously, you know, we aren't any more informed than they are. We just are using logic and common sense and paying attention to the things that they call fake news or misinformation, which turn out to be true at the end of the day. So I think you're exactly right. Information, it really is the battlefield. And if we can get the right information out, we can actually possibly – do you think we could stop the Third World War, or do you think we could just minimize its effect? Because I think you're right. I think they're trying everything they can to start a Third World War but not look like it's their fault. Are they going to be able to pull that off, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, the most likely Third World Wars are going to be with Russia and China. Both of those governments are very, very aware that the U.S. is trying to goad them into war.
Right.
President Xi, who, by the way, I absolutely despise the guy. All right. He's a totalitarian. I do not like him at all. But he's smart. China does use smart people. It doesn't, you know, use
not very diverse,
you know, transgender requirements.
Yeah.
To be the Secretary of Defense in China. But they absolutely understand what's happening, and they are trying to do everything they can to not get the war going. So that's really going to be the question. I think in many ways, ironically enough, and I do genuinely despise the CCP, but I think in many ways, peace depends on them, them being able to navigate this perverse incentive system in the U.S. where our leaders have an incentive to actually start wars. It doesn't really matter where the war is. I mean, if you take Luhansk, right, Luhansk and Donetsk and all this in eastern Ukraine, it is difficult to think of a region that is less important for the average American family. Like, who the heck cares who run? I mean, look, both regimes are dictators. They're both crappy regimes. Why on earth would the average American care? Right. So if they can gin up World War III over something like that, they can do it over anywhere. So I do think it's a danger. Fortunately, I do think that the other side's aware of this, and so they're trying to sort of dodge the bull.
Yeah, it's such a strange position to be in, because I completely agree with you. I got no love for the Chinese Communist Party. I got no love for, you know, a totalitarian autocrat in the style of Putin. But at the same time, they haven't even tried to give us a reason to go to war with Russia. I mean, this is the weird part. At least with Iraq, they came up with weapons of mass destruction. It may have been a total lie. It may have been totally fabricated from whole cloth. But at least they tried to trick us. At least they had the courtesy to trick us that time. This time, they're just going, no, Russia's the enemy. And if you disagree, you're the enemy. And it's just like, all right, you can't even at least try to convince me. You're just gonna dictate this. Okay, so it's a bizarre situation to be in, and yet we seem to be driving towards it. I have the suspicion that there's a economic underpinning to this, that the dollar is headed towards a crash, or, you know, there are countries moving away from the dollar as the global reserve currency. I mean, do you think that we're reaching some sort of dead end here economically, and to avoid the catastrophe that they've set up, they're going to start a war to try to reorganize everything? I mean, do you think there's an economic underpinning to this, to the war drums being beaten?
I think there absolutely is. I think it's overwhelmingly just political. When a country goes to war, voters do tend to rally around the flag. The leader in charge tends to get a boost. You know, if you take somebody like Winston Churchill, he was a washed up nobody.
Right.
He'd screwed up time and time again. The Gallipoli campaign, which is an absolute catastrophe, was a meat grinder. He was a loser, and he happened to be in the right place at the right time when a war started. One could argue he had a hand in pushing it to that. And now, you know, what is he? He's like the next best thing to a demigod,
right,
in Britain. So wars do amazing things. They're always attractive. Unfortunately, that sets up a bad incentive. I think in terms of the economy, the sort of assumption for, I think, about 50 years, more than that, had been that the U.S. government was trying to protect the dollar, was trying to keep the dollar strong, whether it was the petrodollar or however else, you know, encouraging countries to dollarize and so on. And I think what's been surprising to me under Biden anyway is that they don't seem to be doing that anymore. They almost seem to be intentionally gutting the dollar. For example, this seizing Russia's central bank assets. You know, we didn't do that during the Cold War. We had multiple hot wars going on all over the world, including Vietnam, Korea. We never did anything like that. The reason that you wouldn't do something like that is that you want your enemies to be dependent on you.
Right.
Okay. You don't throw away that leverage because, I mean, what did it get us anyway?
Right. It's backfired.
So that was really, so they did it in order to crash Russia's banks. And ironically enough, our banks collapsed instead.
Right.
But at any rate, so that kind of got me thinking that, wait a minute, either these guys don't know what they're doing, which is possible, or they're actually trying to gut the dollar. And, you know, recently, Biden's chief economic advisor, this the chair of the CEA, he came out and he was actually arguing that we need to dethrone King Dollar. This is the guy who was famous for the idiot response. You remember when the guy asked about bonds and he was like, maybe, yes. Let me think. Okay.
All right, folks, you can find that interview at band.video. It's Professor Peter St. Ange. Again, go find that at band.video. Infowars.com/show. Thanks so much for being here with us. We will see you tomorrow. Stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show begins in 90 seconds. And of course, go to Infowarsstore.com to support everything that we do here, the great guests that we get, the great reports that we have. Infowarsstore.com makes it all possible. Infowarsstore.com. Let me take some brain force and then we'll do this commercial. How about that? I can think again. This is the liquid tincture version of Brain Force, which means you can really tailor it to exactly what you need. I tend to take maybe a little bit more than is directed, but it's incredibly powerful stuff, and I have an incredibly demanding job. But you make it easy by going to InfoWarsStore.com, and of course, InfoWarsStore.com makes it easy by supplying me with Brain Force Ultra. I rely on this product to do my job on a daily basis because it's absolutely jam-packed with incredible ingredients. Brain Force Ultra is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com, and get it now because this stuff sells out fast for very good reason. It's a fantastic supplement. It's the type of supplement that once you start taking it, well, you're going to notice if you stop. Go check out what's in Brain Force Ultra. Do your own research, and what you'll find is that this is a powerhouse formula for incredible mental clarity, focus, and energy. Now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Brain Force Ultra, it's now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com.
All right, folks, Nitric Boost is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, this supplement is amazing for several reasons. First of all, Vitality Enhancement. It's a great supplement to add to your routine if you do things like work out, or if you're an athlete, or if you simply want increased vitality throughout the day. The other reason this product is absolutely amazing is because Nitric Boost can help with muscle recovery. Now, we know that muscle recovery is an imperative part of muscle growth, and that this supplement being added to your routine can help you reach your goals in the gym with that recovery. Finally, cardiovascular health is a major factor when it comes to Nitric Boost. We know that heart disease is a major cause of death in the United States of America. Obviously, we've heard tons of reports over the last several years, especially of heart problems, myocarditis, and things like that. We know that Nitric Boost is a way to support your heart health. Check out InfoWarsStore.com today and get your bottle of Nitric Boost now.